Welcome to the Dive Podcast, presented by Willamette Week, where every Saturday we discuss the biggest news stories of the week with Portland's noisiest newsmakers, savviest culturistas, and some of the best journalists in the game. I'm your host, Brianna Wheeler, and I want to hear from you. So send your questions and comments to me, bwheeler@wweek.com. All right, y'all, enjoy the show. If you're not familiar with The Music Man, let me give you a quick synopsis. A feller comes to town making big promises to a small, stubborn community about what value he can add to their lives and the lives of their children. His shtick is to sell a bunch of musical instruments under the guise of forming a marching band to keep the bad kids out of trouble. But the real plan is that once the instruments arrive and they've all been paid for, the music man kicks rocks, essentially leaving the community worse off than he found it and angrier than ever. Poorer still for being involved with such a charlatan. Is there a similar scenario shaking out in Klatskanai? For today's episode, my guest Anthony Effinger will explain how a proposal for a fish grease fuel plant has shaken up the small Columbia River community in a very Music Man-esque way. It's Saturday, October 1st, and this is episode 91 of The Dive. I'm using this vintage musical as a framework to better understand what exactly is playing out in the sleepy, rural enclave of Klatskanai, and I'm hoping it's an apt reflection of why such an environmentally beneficial proposal feels a bit doomed. Here we have a smart-talking businessman with a decisive, logical plan to rejuvenate an ailing township, but his past ventures leave people wondering about whether his latest project will succeed. Is a renewable fish gut diesel plant too good to be true? I'll ask Anthony all about it in just one sec. But first, here's what I learned from this week's edition of Willamette Week. Charter reform update. A September poll suggests Portlanders are leaning towards charter reform, which would shift power to a city administrator, expand the city council, and establish ranked choice voting. But hey, pro-reformers, don't pop the champagne yet. A pollster from DHM Research says that this survey suggests the results could easily change depending on the messaging that voters absorb between now and the election. More updates to come. Susan Elizabeth Shepherd reports that Sassy's, the iconic Eastside strip club, is suing former dancer Kat Hollis for defamation after Hollis, who organized the PDX stripper strike, leading a movement that would become the workers' aid nonprofit, the Haymart Pole Collective, talked some shit in the Oregonian. Hollis is the plaintiff in a suit against Sassy's for wrongful treatment of their employees, by the way. Hollis's attorney maintains that Sassy's suit is clearly retaliation for Hollis speaking up about working conditions, discrimination, and sexual assaults on the job. Let's all be doing due diligence before heading to the strip clubs, huh? And let's advocate for the dancers that we're so freaking legendary for. Yeah? Humulin is a terpene. It's found both in hops and cannabis, which is why an especially fragrant IPA might remind you of a super skunky eighth. It also has some fascinating therapeutic applications. This week's Potlander breaks down those applications and recommends a few strains with humulene-forward terpene profiles. Oh yeah, and I wrote it. All right, now let's talk fish grease, farmer drama, and millionaire music men with Anthony Effinger.
You can make diesel fuel from a lot of things, and for the vast number of years that we've been making diesel, it's been from petroleum, mm-hmm. right? You might remember that there was something called biodiesel.
Yeah.
It still exists, but it was a big deal for a while, and people were making it from used cooking oil. Gathering it from restaurants, and then they kind of distill it in a way to make it so it can run in automobiles. What renewable diesel is the same idea, but it's refined differently so that you can put this stuff straight into an 18-wheeler without having to modify it at all, and it will run just like diesel fuel. And people who use it in their trucks say it actually burns cleaner and better and cuts down on maintenance than regular diesel fuel. And it just so happens that there's a lot of oil in fish.
Yeah.
And after you cut out the fillets and take everything away for cat food and for fish pills and everything else, there's a carcass left that you can boil down, render down into a paste that you can turn into diesel fuel by treating it with hydrogen.
Okay, so next renewable fuels is in Klatskanai. What is it about Klatskanai? Do they just have an abundance of dead fish laying around?
Well, good question. So what do you have in Klatskanai? You have a port westward that sits on the Columbia River and has a big dock that is underused, where you can bring big vessels in mm-hmm. from Asia and from elsewhere in the Northwest, big tankers full of this fish paste, right? Because they need a lot of this because they're going to make 50,000 barrels a day of this
stuff, right?
Renewable diesel. So you're going to need more than that of the raw material. So, and they say the best way to ship that stuff, the greenest way to ship that stuff, is by giant ship because it's just more efficient. You're packing more stuff into the hold than you say could on a big, you know, train full of this stuff, right?
Yeah.
So they say they need to be by a port to bring the stuff in, and they need to be by a port to ship the stuff out. Mm-hmm. They got to get their renewable diesel put back on boats. And some of it will stay in Oregon, but the suspicion is that most of it will go to California because this stuff is really most valuable in states that subsidize the use of renewable diesel. Mm-hmm. They have plans where if you make the stuff and use the stuff, you can get compensated with credits that you can sell to make cash, right? So this is like real cash coming in off the credits. So that's why people are keen to do this. That's why there's a lot of these projects going up now, because, you know, if you make this stuff and use it, you can get cold hard cash.
Yeah.
Other people who aren't using it, you know, who are doing stuff with regular petroleum, they got to pay. They got to pay, and they need these credits, so they got to buy them from somebody. And guess what? They buy them from the people who are getting them from, you know, doing the quote unquote right thing by using renewable stuff, right?
Yeah.
And Oregon has a plan like that. California has a plan like that. Washington is going to start one next year.
The idea of, you know, alternative fuel being produced with minimum environmental effects, it seems like a great idea. But are the Klatskanai residents on board with this?
Some of them are, yes. The people at the port like the plan, right? They want to see the port get used.
Sure.
A number of the business owners would like to see more, you know, business in town, more jobs, because the area is depressed. They took a huge hit. It was a big timber town, and timber's taken a big hit, and so have they. You know, very near there lives a very powerful Oregonian named Betsy Johnson. Klatskanai is in her old district that she resigned to run for governor, mm-hmm. and she is on the record saying this plant is a great thing. Now, the weird thing is, or not the weird thing, but the plant is being situated on a very interesting piece of land. It's on the Columbia River, and it's in an area that is kept dry by a bunch of levees and pumps, right? So it's, you know, we know about levees from New Orleans, right?
Yeah.
You keep the sea out, and it keeps the land dry, and it's great land, right? Because it's been building up with organic material over years and years of, you know, things flowing down and flooding from the Columbia, and it's just great magical farmland where, by the way, you can grow the best mint in, you know, in the world, they say.
Uh-huh.
So if you ever gone to Salt and Straw and gotten like mint chip, that's mint that's made by this farmer named Mike Seeley, who lives in this land. He farms this land, and it's amazing for mint. Like, so it's on this farmland behind these dikes that are relatively fragile, right? I mean, it's holding back the sea. They've been there since 1915. It's holding back the Columbia, rather. They've been there since 1915. And, you know, land like this is really unstable. So if an earthquake hits, this place is going to shake more than most, right?
Yeah.
And so the farmers are like, they're like two things. One, why are you building this industrial plant on top of this great farmland that we're, you know, there's very little just like it in the world. And because they're building the plant, they have to do what's called mitigation. They have to restore wetlands by state law,
mm-hmm.
right? So they build the plant. There's a number of acres that they take for the plant. They have to mitigate 4 acres for every 1 acre by turning it back into wetlands. But the farmers are like, hold on a second, you're turning farmland into wetlands. What happens if, are those wetlands going to behave the way farmland does behind the dikes, or are they going to lead to flooding? So they're very concerned about their land.
Yeah. I was on, so I was reading through the piece and feeling very on board with this plan. I get what the farmers are saying, and I understand that those discussions need to kind of, they're going to shake out the way they shake out, but when I got to your, like, deep dive into the founder's business history, that kind of left a bad taste in my mouth as far as this project goes. So, can you please tell me about Chris Efford? Efford, am I saying that right?
Yeah. Chris Efford. Interesting guy. I met with him once, talked to him on the phone a couple times, very charismatic, very clean cut. He got his start. He's a financial guy. He's not necessarily an energy guy. He's a financial guy first. He got started in his career in Texas, working with a guy named Frank DeLapp, who went bankrupt after promising people a lot of riches in a coal mine in Virginia. Now, Chris says he was out of the, he wasn't dealing with Frank when all that went down, but they had dealings in what are, you know, what are known as penny stocks. They did a lot of deals where they set up these shell companies. The companies didn't do anything, but they were able to sell shares to investors, which is valuable because if, say, you're an operating company that makes, you know, water bottles and you want to sell shares to the public, well, going through an initial public offering is really costly and tough. Well, what if you just found a shell company that was ready to go and you merged into that business? And that's what they did. They did a lot of these deals. A lot of these deals. And they had names like Emerald Acquisition and Ruby Growth. And, you know, they were doing a lot of deals where Chinese companies would merge into the shells and, you know, try to sell shares in the U.S. So it's kind of a backdoor IPO situation. It's definitely one of the gray areas in finance.
Yeah.
You know, it's legal. It's legal as long as you stay in the guardrails, and there are guardrails on this stuff. Like penny stocks are, you know, they keep an eye on them. The SEC keeps an eye on them. But he did a lot of those deals, many of which failed. A lot of them failed, as they often will. But then he went out. He kind of emerges in the Northwest when he was an investor and was very involved in a plant that was making biodiesel out in Eastern Washington. Okay, and this thing ran for about, God, what was it, 6 or 9 months, and then failed. And Efford says it's because the plant wasn't working right. And when it failed, they shut the thing down really fast and fired everybody and locked it up. And then, like, I don't know, was it 9 months later, the inspector from the Washington Department of Ecology went in there and was like, hey, what's all this corroding?
Oh, no.
What are all these corroding barrels and things in here leaking sulfuric acid everywhere, and this is not good. Who left this stuff here? And it was next. So right around the time that fails, he goes to the Port of Longview and says, I want to build a plant where we're going to refine crude oil from the Bakken Formation in North Dakota. And that's a big oil field, very controversial because you have to frack the shit out of it. And it's very high, it's very clean, very volatile crude oil. Well, the Port of Longview said, hold on a second, what happened out in Eastern Washington? That didn't look good.
Yeah.
And they said, by the way, Chris Efford and his partner, a guy named Lou Sumas, did not file timely reports on their financial condition. And when they did file them, they were so redacted, they couldn't figure out if they had the financial wherewithal to build this plant. Okay? So Longview said, you know, we're going to take a pass. And so Longview said, no thanks. And they put out a press release saying, like, look, this doesn't look good. We're out. And then right around that same time, that's when Efford went out to Klask and I and said, now I'm going to be, forget the crude oil thing. Now I'm going green. And we're doing this bio, we're doing this renewable diesel. Well, okay, great. So his partner, Lou Sumas, is like the public face of this thing out in Klatskanai, right? He's meeting with people. He's like pushing this plan. He's like, you know, rah-rah, next energy. Well, shortly after that, he got arrested and extradited to Texas on charges of child sexual abuse. Yeah, and so all of a sudden, and Next did the right thing. They fired him immediately. Eford says, I had no idea this was going on. No idea the guy was like that. He says he'd known him for about 6 years from the deal out in Washington. Now Eford's in charge. And along with him comes this guy named Robert Russell, who's this real estate speculator, developer from San Diego, who's put a ton of money into these projects, mm-hmm. right? And I talked to him. He's a super interesting guy. And he went out to the and talked to the locals out there. And he was bragging about himself in Klatska. He's like, look, I'm a big deal. And I worked at Goldman Sachs. And when I was at Goldman Sachs, they called me El Diablo. Now, this is according to somebody who is familiar with the meeting. And I'll say right up front that Robert Russell denies he said this. But these guys say he came into this cafe out there. I went to the cafe. And he came in. He meets with the guys representing the farmers. And he says, yeah, they called me El Diablo because at Goldman Sachs, I was willing to do anything for money, including gouging out someone's eyeballs and pissing in their dead eye sockets.
Oh my God.
And so the farmers are like, wait a second. And so he buys land. He buys land in this area, in this drainage district, it's called, right? And they're worried he's going to make a play to get on the board of directors that runs this little drainage district, and give them a lot of power. Well, that didn't work out. And I think he even said to me, he said, yeah, the people saw me as a carpetbagger. So anyway, here we are, Chris Eford, and he's really trying to pressure the farmers to do a deal that stops them from opposing him on his plan. And that's when I showed up at this meeting out there, you know, a week ago or so. And man, it was fiery. Let me tell you something. There's some pissed off farmers. They are like, this is some bullshit.
Yeah.
And they convinced their leaders on this drainage board to not vote on this thing. So now they're going to talk about it again on October 12th. This is what I can't figure out. Like, okay, so the guy's track record is not great, but he is really doing a lot of hard work here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, they're going through this permit process that is crazy. I mean, air permits, water permits, you know, Army Corps of Engineers is doing a huge review. Now, they still have a few of those hurdles to jump. But they're spending a lot of money, and somebody is giving them that money.
Yeah.
Right? Even though all that stuff I just told you, somebody's giving them the money. And mm-hmm. he claims Goldman Sachs is his banker. I called Goldman, or emailed Goldman, and they won't confirm that. But, you know, somebody sees enough promise in this deal to sort of tolerate some things would raise questions, right? If you were going to fund somebody,
yeah,
you know, if your due diligence turned up this kind of stuff, I think you'd be like, wait a second.
Yes.
So it's happening. It's happening. They're going forward. They've missed the water permit twice. Like the DEQ was like, no, twice. They said no twice.
Yikes.
For incomplete. It's because of incomplete information. Said. And that's the same stuff that got him in Longview, right?
Yeah.
You know, but they hired a bunch of really smart consultants,
mm-hmm.
you know? I mean, I know one of them personally. I'm just like, I don't know, man. It's a mystery. It's a mystery. And it's going to play out. I mean, it's going to play out. But my point is, if you want a fast buck, this is not a fast buck.
Mm.
I mean, they've been at this for, I don't know, 4 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I know. They've been at this for 4 years, and they aren't going to be able to start to break ground until 2025. You know, like, you know.
It's a long game.
Some people would say the long game. Some other people might say the long con. I don't know. I'm not.
Well, editorialize with me a little bit. After all of the time you spent, all the research that you did, all the people that you talked to, do you think that this project will come to fruition, that it will be successful?
I would say that the odds are very long.
Mm.
How's that for a very boring answer?
Be more vague.
God, be more vague. So maybe what they do is they get this thing all permitted up, right? And they don't build it, but they sell that whole package, right, to somebody else.
Yeah.
You know, who does have $2.5 million,
sure.
You know? Like, you know, I mean, they're getting their feedstock for this thing, supposedly the fish paste, which, by the way, not many people are making renewable diesel out of fish paste yet, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's a great fuel, too, because it's got a low carbon intensity, which is how you get more money from these programs that incent the production. You want to use stuff that's recycled and not petroleum.
Mm-hmm.
You get more money for that. You get more money for that. It's just the way the program's set up. So fish guts are awesome. They just got to figure out a way to use fish guts. I mean, nobody's figured that out quite yet. But, you know, Chris will be like, look, there's people in Vietnam who are fish processors who are coming up with tons and tons and tons of catfish carcasses. And we should be using those to make fuel instead of dumping them in the ocean, which is a great point.
Totally.
Right.
Big thanks to this week's guest, Anthony Effinger, and thank you for joining me. I hope you'll join me again next week. Until then, bye!